Buff head programmer Kai Paranyan. I'm speaking today with bum writer, director, slash other stuff, slash star, Anthony Antonius Leroy. Thank you for sharing your film with us, dude, and sitting down to talk with me about it.
It's an honor and a privilege to show this movie at Buff.
Well, I hope everyone's feeling right now. That's what I imagine everyone. All right, so to start, you said this in your intro, or you mentioned this, but can you talk to me about shooting on tape? Because you've shot multiple shorts and longer pieces on it, and you seem very familiar with the technology. Why do you like it so much? Why are you drawn to tape as a format, as a medium?
The first camera I ever had was one of those Sears over the shoulder VHS cameras. And I think in the last 10 to 15 years, I got really annoyed at watching studio films being shot on digital and then being dumbed down to look like it was shot on VHS instead of just being authentic and shooting it for real. And it was something that I did want to get back into. Like, I would never want to shoot a found footage movie on like my phone or something, you know. I'm more interested in the ugly destruction of tape, and in particular the degradation. I also just like, I think you can get away with a lot on tape. For example, some of our effects could look a little shoddy if they were shot in 4K, right? And you know, we saw every detail, but I find that those details are lost because there's not enough information on tape. So when you see it on VHS, it's like, oh, that worked. That actually worked. And especially a lot of people don't do this when they're shooting on tape, but I still color grade the tape after I put it through because I really want my films to look different. And I think like, trying to pull as much information out of nothing as I can is like, it creates this really unique look that I'm super proud of. And I think a lot of it too is like, I love tape glitches and being able to experiment with them and how I can create them naturally and then kind of manipulate the placement of them to serve as transitional pieces between segments is just like I don't know, I think it's really fun. I do love shooting on tape. It's hard to give it up. The only thing I really don't like is if you don't get the shot, you can't just delete it off the SD card or something, and you're not going to rewind it, so you just got to keep going forward, because if you rewind it, it could create like issues with other takes. Like it could like accidentally tape over it or sound would be lost and things like that. But that's okay. Like when we made our baseball movie Worm Burner, we cut it down to 6 minutes, but we shot 2.5 hours of footage.
Really cool.
And yeah. And we really, really dissected it because we could have all the Tad Nightingale movies. They have no script. Right. So we just, you know, I ad-lib something or, you know, I tell them to do something, tell my friends to do something and like we all hurt ourselves and it's great. But with Worm Burner, we could have told that story like 3 or 4 different ways just from the amount of footage that we had. And instead I figured, well, I'll shoot it the most like, or I'll tell the story in the most simple manner, it being like literal found footage. And then just like, rushing through basically 6 minutes of pure chaos and trying to find some level of coherency in that. But yeah, tape's cool. Digital
tape tape is cool. Well, the movies, I agree, the movies look really sick, and I want to ask you about the color in a second. But before that, I just want to say, like, so are you a fan of like shot on video, other shot on video movies, like for the classic era?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Can you give some examples of some SOV stuff you did?
Yeah. I love, obviously early Polonia Bros. And even though this movie was shot on 8mm and not shot on tape, I just want to bring up Things because I love Barry J. Gillis so much and Wicked World's Hype.
Wicked World is hype. Wicked World is a it's a crazy movie.
What we're living in, dude, you
Yeah,
know.
world.
But there's a great one from, I believe, 1991 called Soul of the Demon, and I think it's like a super underrated SOV.
Ooh, all right. Write that down.
Blood Lake, you know. I don't know. I love a lot of J.R. Buchwalter stuff. Kingdom of the Vampire is really cool. Kind of like a, it's like a domestic vampire drama.
Hell yeah.
Also, like, I also think it's really underrated. Sledgehammer.
Classic.
Boarding House, OG. Yeah, I don't know. Oh, gotta bring up my boy David Dawson, because he shoots some sweet SOV movies too. Modern day. He shot Family and Flesh Games. They're great.
I gotta see Flesh Games. Yeah, cool.
Oh yeah, super great. My boy Justin Cottingham shot some stuff. Blood Pizza, which is just a really hilarious 5 to 6 minute SOV short. That's just ridiculous. It's amazing. It's kind of transcendent.
Blood Pizza.
Blood Pizza.
Great title. SOV movies, they have great titles as well. Do you know there's a filmmaker also in the Buff program who's a shot up for you, Steph? Do you know Susanna Capistasi as
Oh my God. I'm sorry I didn't bring her up.
well?
She's the Emasculator, Night of the Zodiac. Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's the other, it's the previous one, yeah.
Yeah, hilarious. I love it so much. Her and I have actually been chatting back and forth through email for the last like 2 months, just kind of well, I just want to pick, I want to buy out all her stuff and directly to her so I can really pay her for it. Because she's just amazing, and we need people like that. We need filmmakers like that. Bruce Longo's another one, who's doing some crazy stuff on tape. I don't know, it's, you know, Janis Dot Click. Those guys are insane. Yeah, I think it's a really cool time to resurrect SOV, however you're gonna do it. Because you don't need, you know, I think with SOV, you have to become a lot more creative in how you do things, because our, you know, the filmmakers who operate in that landscape, their budgets are so low. And I feel like their hearts are so big with each project that like that genuineness just really blows through the screen. And you know, Susanna's awesome. She's just insane, dude.
Yeah, they're quite the Emasculator is quite nuts, quite an experience. But yeah, I think I really like what you said there a second ago about it's like, I mean, it kind of getting to like why is there this sort of resurgence of like the SOV aesthetic, right? And it's like I feel like a big part of it is the SOV filmmakers that a lot of people appreciate from back in the day. They were so creative and they were so resourceful and like that spirit of just like working within limited means and finding like such interesting space for creativity and just kind of different ways of expression, right? And I think that kind of still lives on. I haven't like I don't think I've seen any. I'm sure they exist, but I don't think I've seen any like let's say new shot on video movies that feel just like pastiche, right? It's more like taking the spirit of
Precisely.
what it means, right?
Yes, exactly. And that was another thing too, is that like with my work, I wanted it to also sort of be set apart too. And I do love found footage. So I figure if I shoot a found footage movie with the spirit of like shot on video films of the 90s and 80s, I think that would create this really strange avenue, you know, because I mean, a lot of found footage, you know, I don't think, I love found footage, but there's a lot of stinkers, as they say. And then I just added to the pile. You know. But it's no, I think people approach shooting on video in really crazy ways. And I did want to follow suit, but I wanted to create something that felt new to both genres, and was also like just crazy, like a coke rush or something. Like I just wanted to go ham in my editing and stuff like that. And they're all great experiments to just make me refine my storytelling into like a shorter time and what I can get away with and stuff like that. Like, how much information can I throw into 5 minutes? That's something I really am like interested in doing.
And one of the ways that you also, one of the many ways that you kind of take this the found footage kind of genre space and make it feel different as well is something you mentioned earlier, which is color. And I think this is one of my most favorite things about your work is that as you said before, you color grade the tape and you color grade it with a lot of intention and a lot of experimentation. You know, like it doesn't like Bum does not look like a movie that was just captured on tape, right? It looks like it's more expressive than that, if I can say that. So
Yeah.
can you tell me about how you approach color and what you're doing in that zone?
Mostly just screwing around. No, but I do love coloring things ever since I first started getting involved in like making films, 'cause I'm like, I want to know how I can make an image better or worse, you know? And I want to do like, I have experimented so much with color grading for friends' films and other works like that and my own stuff. But I felt with the VHS, I really wanted it to feel bold. I wanted everything to really feel like it doesn't exist in our world. Like, this is like an anti-reality thing or an alternate reality, where tape is just like blowing through the screen. Like, these colors are exploding at the audience. But I also still want it to look pretty. So I definitely am like, you know, color, I don't know, I just really love color. And I think also, you know, we have like the character of Valerie Charles is a very like greed-driven character, and her green suit, I just like wanted to, you know, pump those greens up. And my dude, Garth Brooks, is, you know, wearing the Canadian tux. I figure in the dead of night, you're gonna notice these colors a lot more if they're pumped up as well. Because like, you can't see anything but the characters sometimes with the lights. And if you can already tell like what their color is and what that code is, you're gonna see that just like piercing through the darkness every time we show those characters, you know? But it is like, it's a lot of experimenting and just kind of getting the right feeling, the right, like Worm Burner was hard to color because the daytime stuff was really easy to color, but nighttime on the field, it's just like, oh, well, we have like these dirty browns from the dirt, these fucking crazy saturated greens from the grass in the field, and the white lines, and then we have like these really ugly lights. It's like, oh man, I don't know how this is gonna look, but I gotta find it. That one took a lot of toying around to try and figure out what would f I don't know if it would be like feel right, but what I felt looked right, in terms of that boldness as well.
It's and you and in Bum, even before we get to the nighttime and things are really popping, and before we get to the exploding color, right? Like even when it's you in the field, I forgot what the title is, but the like
Oh yeah, where the magic
where the
happens.
magic happens, right? Like even that, like it's so it feels very saturated and it feels like it's not like unreal, but it does feel like the daytime light is has its own kind of different difficult qualities to it than the nighttime light, you know? Like it's just I just love the way I just love the way the color looks in your movies, dude. Seems
Well, I
very
appreciate that, dude. Like, yeah, the daytime stuff is always a lot more difficult. The
interesting.
nighttime stuff, you're dealing with less dynamics too. Like, if I am in the dark and I shine someone with a flashlight, well, that person's all I have to worry about. I don't have to worry about anything around. But when it's daytime, it's like, oh my God, there's so many different things I need to take into consideration when I'm adjusting levels and like trying to find which will be like more saturated or less saturated. What colors am I going to pull? Also, sometimes do something where I do a lot of overlays. So what I'll do is, there's a scene where I'm walking to the car after I get beat up in the park, And what I did was I basically processed it from tape to digital on two different devices. Then I put the HD one underneath and the less HD one over top. I zoomed it in like I think like 5% and just moved it off center a hair, and then like changed the opacity of the image so it looked like these things were just like existing just off of each other. Like these images were not precise on top of each other, but it creates this really hazy, weird look. And I think there's a scene where in the field where I'm talking at the park, doing that created like some halation above the tree line, which I don't know how I got that in VHS, but I think it's just due to those overlays. It made it look super hazy when the light was punching through the trees at the top. But those are just like happy accidents, you know, and a lot of those happen when you're shooting on tape.
Well, yeah, happy accident is only happy if you embrace it, right? So you got to make the
Yeah.
call to be like, that was interesting. I definitely like in my stuff. Many time I've been like, oh, I fucked up. Oh, actually,
Yeah.
oh,
Yeah.
good. Yeah, keep that. Don't know how to replace that. Don't know how to do it again. Better. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel that.
Okay. Can we? Okay. I have a. Do I want to see about that? Okay, I'm actually okay. I'm gonna skip the question I had because we're talking about color. One of my favorite moments in the movie is the moment where I think it's Ian Coventry, or as I think of him, Tad Nightingale, shows
Right.
up and he threatens to shoot himself as the cop. He's the cop. That bit is so funny and like really horrible. And B, his face is so red. But can you just talk up to me about that moment? Because it's That it's not my it, I think it probably is my favorite moment of the movie. It's just a small thing. Just he just everything about it. I don't know. Can you talk about it?
I love Ian. And for Ian, sometimes it's not really it's not acting, you know, it's just living. And in a moment like that, now you can't direct a madman, you know. This is one of my biggest things, and Ian is hopping mad. And when I tell him, I say, Ian, we're gonna put you in this cop uniform, and I said, hey, you should put that gun under your chin and just act crazy, like, you know, floor is yours. And that's what he ad-libbed that moment. That was the first take. And I said, like, if you pay attention to it, the background, Grant Moore, who plays Jim Lackey, had to turn around because he was laughing so fucking hard. And that was the first time he met Ian, like that night. And I and my buddy Locke wouldn't keep a good like poker face there, but Grant's phenomenal actor, but he had to turn around because he was like, I'm gonna ruin this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm even thinking about it now. I'll laugh at it. Yeah, it is. It's. I mean, it's not only is it really funny, it is also like we live in a hell world. Like this is a fucked up place, right? Yeah.
It's so funny, like running to help for someone, and they're just like, you want me to help you? I'm gonna kill myself.
It's gonna be very traumatic for you. Yeah.
Yeah, you want me to help you? I'm gonna make sure you need more help.
Exactly. Yeah, it reminds me of that meme, which is like, you know, it's like you see these four guys. What do you do? It's like kill myself to change the course of their lives forever. But
Precisely, yeah.
I'm very glad to see Ian show up in Bum. Okay, can you? Okay, I've got. I'm gonna move on to kind of a little less bouncing off of the specific color questions. Can you talk about the penis prosthetic, the giant bum troll bum cock?
Yeah, it's well, it's a strap-on sleeve, but basically, you know, I'm hanging out for my foreskin boys, you know, I'm looking for my uncircumcised homies, and I was like, I want to see. I said, you know, we always see like we never see like uncircumcised dicks too often in like especially in something like this. If there is nudity, and I'm like, ah, oh, you know, I gotta find an uncircumcised one. It's gotta be massive, but not like too unbelievable, but just, you know. And I found this one that a woman made on Etsy. It's a strap-on sleeve, and it's awesome. So when we got it in, came in a box, We had to take a knife through the urethra to stick a tube through it, and because it was a big process trying to get this blood piss flying out. And what we did was we stuck a tube through it. It went in between, like in the pants, because it comes out the zipper. So the tube goes through Quentin's legs, up the back of his shirt, out the back, and then we're up on a hill, like a sand hill in there, and we poured pineapple juice in the tube and then fake blood in the tube, and then Loxo is blowing on the end of the tube. And we're howling like when we're doing this shit, because it's so awful. And it's so funny just seeing that stuff come to life. I think also really that moment was like, I also think like this homeless character, the vagrant, he's like, all these guys cannot understand like the state of homelessness, and they hate homeless people, right? These characters. So I figure, a lot of dudes have an ego about the size of their dicks and stuff like that. And I figure if you give a character who these people would never want to be involved with and give them the one thing that these characters don't have, just like a massive dick, I think that there's a funny dynamic there. You gotta get pissed on sometimes,
You gotta get
so
pissed off sometimes. Well, I
it's
mean,
one of those things.
it's what you just said there about like this thing that, because there definitely, I feel like there is like a, a lot of like, let's say like really right wing, like violent fantasy, right? There is like a sexual component to it, right? Like a sexual,
Precisely.
yeah. Especially like, I think especially you see this when people talking about like people of color, like black people, there's definitely that like fetishization of like the body, right? As this thing, like, and then
Right.
have it, right? And I think that similar here, right? It is, and it is like in Bum, it is like the homeless folks are kind of like the deranged, in some way they kind of fit in the deranged fantasy of these right wing people, of being like kind of sexually powerful monsters in a way, right? But it's like deservedly
Yeah.
so. It's
Right.
like,
I
yeah.
yes, and there's also prior to that scene, when my character sees the remnants of the burned down hobo camp, I piss all over their belongings.
Yes, right. Yes, right.
And then when I enter a territory that's not mine, to be marked as territory, I get pissed on in return.
Just the flipping the switch on you, right? Yeah, totally. I didn't even, yeah.
Yeah.
That's I think that's good screenwriting. But yeah, that's really, it's really sick. Yeah, because yeah, you piss on that sweet little teddy bear.
Yeah, teddy bear, one-eye teddy bear,
Teddy bear and
and then
the
I get pissed on by a one-eyed monster. So,
And it's beautiful. I mean, it's horrifying, but it's also, it looks cool as hell. Yeah, and I really love, just this, didn't really know this, I just really love the beat where oh, I forgot, I'm sorry, I forgot the character names, but the sound person, when she's like, this is my family,
Bev.
Bev, and when
Oh
Bev,
yeah, Bev. Yeah.
that's like a really good moment. It's a really good moment as well, because it's like you've seen how much shit she's gotten, right? And it's just like, it's like, yep, this is the underclass burbling back up, right? Like
Damn right, yeah.
it's just I found it a very cathartic movie in its own way. Can you talk about, well, we talked about the big penis prosthetic. Can you talk about the gore in general? Because the movie is quite gory. And can you talk about building it? Of course, you got you getting your hand sliced in half, and then I think, and then later when Val gets sliced through the head, looks fucking sick. Like, who's making the gore? Are you in charge of the gore? Do you have a gore fiend friend?
I have a Gorfine friend. Genevieve Vigras. She's awesome, dude. She's a great, great, great effects artist. We talked, I guess, like my friend hired her for their short film, and then I got to know her over the few days, and we were in chats, and then I said, look, I want to do this movie, and it has a lot of effects. And I want to, I love doing effects too. So we both did effects for like different things, but some of the big stuff she handled, like the well, Leia's or Valerie Charles' demise, is like, I could not think of how I was going to pull that off properly. And she did such an amazing job. Basically, what happened was I bought her a mannequin. I think it was a half mannequin, waist up. And she cut it in half, filled it with styrofoam, soldered the styrofoam in, and was like looking at an anatomical textbook and soldered it just the way that it would look if it was like legitimately cut in half. Built intestines for the stomach. And then basically, what we did was I think she like molded the styrofoam and we dressed. So I knew when we do this shot, we could only do it from behind because I'm not gonna be able to sell it that it's her face. And it also has to be done a certain way too, because it's gonna be like very chaotic. And so basically what she ran a bunch of tubes through the styrofoam from head to torso or whatever, hips. And she had a, I think it was like a garden sprayer, pesticide sprayer filled with blood. And so originally what was going to happen was when she gets split, it just explodes blood, but there were too many tubes and then the pressure didn't like explode. So then I was like, okay, we have like, I'm thinking I'll have to do this some other way when I'm editing the footage. But basically we wrapped one fishing wire around the head, and someone off way off camera held it tight. So we had the two halves just like kissing, and we put a wig on, and I should have stapled the wig on. My dumbass did not do that. And so what happened was, yeah, basically Quinta came up, hit it, and then I just used two different takes, one with Leia actually there and really getting the foam axe in the head, and then we swapped it out. I tried to cut the transition as perfect as possible, and then we just blew it up. And then after it was done, we just made Quentin just smoke it with the axe as like really brutally as much as possible. She did just a phenomenal job. The fire stuff we did, that might be something later you want to
That's
ask. I
my
don't.
next question is talk about the
Okay.
fire. Yeah.
Yeah, the fire. Very dangerous. Very unsafe. We're all under the bridge, and this was like the big thing. We're like, oh, we're gonna set this fake body on fire. And very illegal. But most of the things we do are very illegal in our movies. Yeah, so we just everybody was at the other end of the bridge, and I think I got my sister to throw the torch on, and my sister plays Bev. So yeah, I made this big, I literally poured gasoline all over the fake body, and then I made a trail. The first trail didn't work. It only went like a little bit, but I didn't connect it, and the dirt separated it, so it didn't work. So we put it out. Then I did like a longer trail, like twice. Then I gave the torch to my sister and I said, throw it. And I'm going to be like close to it, like enough that when you throw it, we're going to watch it like really erupt on top of this guy. We didn't have enough time to really do other things, and we wanted to like put like rails under his arms, so when he sets on fire, we could try and shake him until it burns the rails or whatever. But we just didn't have enough time to do it. But it turned out really good. And then we were right beside the water, so we just kept taking jugs and putting the fire out afterwards. But we let it burn for a while, and I remember when I set the camera down and I was capturing or like getting water. When I came back and looked at the shot, I said, that looks like a great final shot. And then, it's just filming this fire, and then there's more grain. I just want to like start powering up the grain till it's like the tape is gonna explode, the arm I did. I think I did that. Maybe Genevieve did it, but yeah, we just ran a tube through. and I held my fake arm. I stuck my elbow in the vest. The head was, it was just, we gooped it up and then threw it at the camera. That was fun too.
Goopy head.
It was Mac Conway's head from Body Bag, but
Okay, you good. You gotta reuse the yeah. That's good. Reuse the head. It's all you, heads are expensive, I imagine. Or at least they're.
they're like 250 USD, and for Canada, you're better off getting a real one, so.
Finding a real Jim Lackey. One of my favorite bits in the movie as well. I said earlier that I really love the bit with Ian as well, but I really love this bit as well. It's when the I'm gonna call him the troll, when the Tissler bum is holding the torch, and he walks into the water and he goes
Oh my
into the
God,
water.
yeah.
That bit is so good, and it's so just on an aesthetic level. I'm just like, ooh, baby, that looks awesome. So we can one, can you talk about shooting that scene and then kind of maybe branch off that into talking about like the conception of this bum character as well, and also the prosthetics of the mask and stuff.
Yeah, so that scene I played in my head a lot, and I ended up just like kind of chickening out of doing it. But then I was like, it was actually the night we shot the climax of Wormburner at the baseball field. After we did that, we went straight under the bridge and shot that scene.
Oh, cool.
And basically, I told like Quentin is an amazing kayaker. He's been all over the world doing kayaking, and he's incredible. So I know this guy's got lungs, you know what I'm saying? And
Yeah.
I said, Quentin, here's my idea. You got a torch. I'm in the water. I keep going further in the water, and you walk out, and then you go underneath with the torch. So we wrapped a tissue around it and around the torch, and then we just lit the towel on fire, and then he's coming in, and we got smoked out pretty hard. By the time he went under the water, I just got a face full of smoke, like, and I'm already like, I'm not touching, right? So I'm trying to keep the camera up. I swim in, I put my foot on the rock falls, rolls away, and I dunk the camera under the water and killed it.
No.
Yes, I got the tape out. The tape was fine, but the camera was screwed. The next day, I had to drive my buddy down to his place, which is about a 4-hour drive. And I went on Marketplace and I found the same camera. So, and it was on the way. So, it was a dude who was an ex private investigator. He had a bunch of these old cameras from the 90s when he would do them. And so it was cool that I was like, this is the last camera he has. I got it. And there's a tape inside, and it was porn. That's not
Beautiful.
true. That's not true. I wish it was true.
Hey.
Sorry. So the other question was about the concept of the vagrant. Okay, so that's a mask. My sister found it at some old thrift store. And one night she came home, and I saw her in the driveway, and she was coming up, and she's like, "Look at my mask." And I was like, "Oh, dude, I need that thing." I don't know, but when I saw that mask, I said, "That would be so cool to do something with that, like a project." And then I had a friend who was doing airsoft, and he had a bunch these military clothes that he gave to me, and I started thinking, like, what if this was like a Vietnam veteran or something who got deformed or something along those lines, and was essentially houseless, right, and living out there, and that concept just came because I was like thinking about how like my cousin was homeless for a while, had some awful drug problems and big family issues, and it was just like the system came crashing down on this dude, and I felt so bad about it, because we used to be really close when we were young, and the situation just like angered me to no end. In particular with his father and the treatment of him, right? So I was like, I need to write something that feels angry, feels mean, but also like I'm not specifically like that's my message, because I like a lot of I want to pour a lot of things into a project, right? And with this character, I was also thinking about, post-Vietnam veterans being homeless and things like that too. And Reagan dumping, well, emptying out these the mental health institutions, stuff like that too. And yeah, that's I figure like this guy is so good at like he's gonna be great at killing people. And if I made him like an ex-Vietnam veteran, that could be like enough justification. And I'm not even specifically saying that, but he's just in his military garb that I think that maybe with this also being an unnamed period piece, that could be just like something picked up on or whatever,
Yeah, definitely. I mean, definitely the outfit, he definitely evokes those that kind of imagery you're talking about, even if it doesn't explicitly say anything, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And there, we also had to make the homeless characters had to be deformed, because you and I had talked about this like a long time ago, but just like the way the media views lower class people as kind of like grotesque or disgusting. And with this being like a media team, running around with exploitation devices, the old cameras, it's yeah, these are the things that it's the only way I could tell the story,
It makes sense. It's like they have this kind of a fantasy, as it were, of like what these fucked up people were, and it's like, well, the fantasy bites them back. It goes, okay, this is if this is what you if this is how you feel, well, guess what? They're one, you're fucked,
Yeah.
and two, you can't, it's almost like blowback, I think of it, right? It's like you demonize people enough, and then they will become your demons eventually, right? You kill someone's family, you push someone down into the dirt, and you don't get, you say it's your fault for being in the dirt, and then what? That's not gonna like engender good feelings towards the oppressor, right? That's gonna make them get pissed off and go hog wild.
Yep.
Hopefully.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Can you tell me where are you shooting these movies? And secondly, what is the vibe there? And then thirdly, do you think Bum captures some of the space's like psychic energy?
That's an interesting question. Okay, so Bum is shot in the opening stuff. The daytime stuff, and then driving in the car was shot in Pembroke, Ontario, which is where I was born, as well as Tom Green. It's the only thing this place is maybe known for, but appreciated. But all the nighttime stuff was shot in Quebec, in Waltham, Quebec, which is where I grew up. There's a bridge that goes into the town. It's a 300-person hamlet. If you look us up on Wikipedia, the only thing you're going to really see is a 1996 UFO landing, which is really funny. It's there's a picture in it, and I think like a skinwalker version of myself is maybe in that picture. I don't know. There's something in the water, dude. But yeah, that play, example being like we have fake police lights on top of black cars driving around at night. People are dressed as cops. Ian was walking on the highway with an assault rifle in his cop costume, and like people drove by him and he waved at them. And that these are the charms of rural life out here. We can get away with a lot. Like we're in Burner, we had a sniper rifle on the baseball field, on the baseball diamond, and Ian's running around with a sword on the baseball diamond. We're doing all these crazy gore like right out in the open, and nobody cares. Psychic energy of the land, of the place.
Yeah, the place, like
Yeah.
what are the vibes? You talked about this kind of sense of the kind of you can get away a lot of stuff. It's a small town thing. Is it like, do you have is there positive energy in the air? You going into the hamlet over the bridge? Do you feel like is there a disconcertion there? Is it run down? Is it feeling, what's the vibe?
One thing I think about a lot is that a lot of my films have a bridge in them. And I don't know if that's like traveling from reality to this anti-reality or what I'm trying to convey there in my subconscious, but it's not something I'm like, needs a bridge. This movie needs a bridge, you know? I think when I cross the bridge into this place, I mean, I really do feel at home because it is where I grew up. That's where my parents live. But also, like, I think what I love is that nobody gives a shit about anything, you know? And I think, therefore, I'm like, hey, I'm making a movie. Oh, yeah. Well, hey, I caught a pickerel last week. No one gives a shit. Nobody cares. And I think that's great. Like, if they see me, they know, also know, they're like, oh, that's a young Leroy kid. Still making movies, eh? Still wet in his diaper, eh? You know? Yeah, I think just the. Plus, there's also like an inclusivity too, where like going back to Worm Burner, some people ask me, like, how'd you shoot on the baseball field? And I said, well, I went to the baseball field at a baseball game, and then I asked the rec association person if they could leave the lights on. And sure enough, I went to school with her younger brother.
Yeah.
So that was it. I don't know. Ask when you can, but mostly just do it. Yeah.
It sounds so. Yeah, it sounds like there's just a lot of space and a lot of kind of like some you have enough familiarity with everybody that it seems pretty straightforward to shoot there, shoot around.
Yeah, easy. Like, no permits, no nothing. And I think for my whole life, your movie, exactly, that great long take. I think about that. It keeps me up at night. I think,
We actually talked to someone you because you guys from the people just see you do gore and shit and having the gun on the highway. We did have a security guard talk to us during that, just being like, "What the fuck are you doing? What are you?" And we you know that's just classic thing where someone goes they see you with a camera, but they're like, "What could you possibly be filming here?" You know, they
Exactly.
I don't understand it. Anyway, sorry, go on.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, I'd rather ask for forgiveness and permission in terms of filming. Like, I think we had the cops called on us once when we made Body Bag, and because a truck came around the corner on this dead-end highway and we pulled the body bag off the road and a severed arm fell out.
Actually thought
And this truck is like, it's kind of like a dog when it's a dog's trying to sneak to get something. This truck just slowed right down, and there's two guys on this side of the highway and two guys on this side. And he's just like, if I go slow enough, they might not fucking see me, you know? And 10 minutes later, another car is coming this way, and we see it from far away. I throw a body bag in this ditch, everything in there. I zipped it right up and threw it in the ditch. Sayonara. And then I see the lights stop and they're talking to the other two actors on the other side of the road. And then the cherries come on. It's the fucking cops. I said, oh my God. And this guy gets out, this French cop. He grabs his vest up by the shoulders, you know, real showing off there. What's going on here? He said, we're shooting a movie. Oh, movie. Good movie. And gets in his car and speeds away.
You could
What?
have been killing someone.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's got to be a concept later, you know?
Yeah. No, that you gotta use that. That's so good. Hey, people, even if people love the movies, even if they don't want to watch them, they're like, ooh, cool, making art. Good for you. That's sick. That's really fun. Especially
Yeah.
that highway area in Body Bag is like very desolate. It just seems like a prime space if you actually were going to toss a body off the highway. It seems like the place to do it. Yeah, people check out
Yeah.
Body Bag. Good movie.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, that bridge is just that one. The first time I went across that bridge at nighttime and I saw the lights were like so old, they were kind of green. I'm like, I'm filming here. Don't care. I'll be back. You know, and then I basically wrote a movie just about that bridge. But with Bum too, my sister had this old Beetle from like 2001. And we'd drive around, she had tape deck in there, and we'd listen to, you know, 80s or 90s club mixes. And she said, I gotta show you something. So she brought us down this dirt road down to where this bridge was. And this used to be the boat launch, but they close it off because it's very dangerous to the, like where we go over the guardrail and bum, that was like the entrance. And then they put a guardrail there so no one could go down there because it's so dangerous coming out of there right onto the bridge. You know, it's like, but lo and behold, there was a hole in the side of the bridge, like a storage thing. And when we went in there, we were like singing because the acoustics were insane. And it's like, oh my God. For me, like when I start working on a project, I'm thinking of location, number one. Number two is the characters and like what they're going to bring to the table, stuff like that. And then three, I'm thinking set pieces. And then that's when I'll start like filling in the patches with writing. So with Bum, what I did was the first like 15 minutes of the movie is all ad-libbed. And I figure if I start a movie with being like start a movie where it's all ad-libbed, when it starts moving into the scripted elements, people won't really notice. Because they'll feel how loose it is, and then that energy, if I could bring the same energy in the character to the later elements, I don't think people will really pick up that it's like scripted. I don't know. Maybe
No, no,
not.
I totally agree. Yeah, no, I mean, that's also like, I feel like I see some found footage stuff, and you can feel that tension between the kind of looseness and the actual writing stuff there. I mean, I think Blair Witch is a good example where they do a good job of making it all feel of a piece, right? But I definitely have
Yeah.
some found footage stuff where you're like, and now that's them riffing, and this is now like the script is coming in. This is where the direction is coming in, right? So I definitely think
Yeah.
it feels like a natural escalation. It doesn't feel like, yeah, it doesn't feel like you're shifting gears at all. Or, you are shifting gears, but in terms of like the performances and the energy, it doesn't feel like you're shifting. Yeah, as a thumbs up, as agreeing with you.
I appreciate it. I'm glad it worked.
We're on. Sorry, I just feel like my brain went in the circle just there, but that's cool. Okay. I have another question here, which is, we're talking about you're trying to talk about logistics here, and talking about finding this location, and you're also like this. Just I love how much in the story you're just exploring and figuring stuff out with your sister, and kind of just like being excited by images and stuff. And you're working with your sister in the movie as well. Bum in particular has like a pretty solid sized cast list. There's like what, like 8 or 9 people in it, maybe more than that. Especially like a no budget movie. Like, what are the logistics of working with this many people, especially seemingly in the middle of the night by the side of the road? How are you?
So basically when I started writing, I said I need a news team, and I need some character. I really wanted to work with Leia, who plays Valerie Charles, because like we went to high school together and I'm like very impressed by her art. She does amazing costume design and stuff like this. So I said, I kind of want I had someone else in mind, but they weren't particularly like comfortable on camera. So I said, I know Foolproof would be going with Leia. And when she was down and we had like a little table read, originally it was just like the core was like me, my sister, Josh, Leia, just those four people. And then I started thinking Josh's buddy Brendan was there, and I said, well, I could set up another character talking about him, and then he can show up later and just be cannon fodder. And that happens. Everything. And I just kind of start adding like people little bits at a time. My buddy Gary plays McCully, and he's in it for like a little bit. But then like basically what we like I started kind of, we made the movie. We made all the bridge stuff, except for the Jim Lackey bit at the end and the cops. But everything else we had already made. And then I said, I like this character, Garth Brooks, so much. I kind of want to have like the misadventures of this dude at the beginning. And maybe like people are like, oh, I'm stuck with this asshole for the whole fucking movie, you know? And, so that's what I did. I started thinking like, okay, I want a scene like this. scene like that because I had already gotten good at ad-libbed script and direction because of like the Tad Nightingale trilogy, because they had no script. And then I got very good at being like, okay, if I just go with my vision and like whatever my first instinctual thing is, that's what I'll do. So when I approached the beginning of the movie, setting up my character and stuff like that, we just shot that in like half an hour or something. And I was like, oh, it's really funny. I'm just like ad-libbing as the character, but I feel a lot more comfortable doing it as well, because at the beginning, Bum had a different opening. It all started on the bridge, but I felt the acting was so stilted and I was so uncomfortable that I knew it wouldn't work. It would just like read as stilted. So I said, oh, I have to approach this like in a sort of maximalist way instead of being so compressed here. So I did that, and then basically, I'm like, okay, now I can set up a little bit more with the characters. I could pick them up. I could have, McCully's character, and then Josh kind of being like a silent protagonist as the cameraman at the beginning. And then when Valerie Charles shows up, everyone's doing their part to make Garth Brooks look like an idiot. Josh starts talking when she shows up. My sister is just like constantly trying to, but I'm also like, I got my knives out at everybody too. But it just shows how pathetic this guy is, and I really felt like, even though this guy's a complete asshole, I do want to garner a little bit of empathy by it through understanding the character. And I think in the beginning, it's like, oh, this guy is like really like, beating his chest at everything and everyone. And he just like constantly gets mulled over by reality. And then like when he meets someone who's like way above him in a place he could only dream of being, he's just like a lap dog, He's like, oh, I'm the best, I got everything here. But then she's like, you actually are stupid. And he's like, yes, I am stupid. Yes. I'm taking that and I'm gonna fall to the ground on that.
He's
But
very
yeah.
people in the end, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. 'Cause he, without the sound girl, without the cameraman, without the equipment, he's nothing.
And it also feels like the sound girl, the cameraman, like they don't like he's exploiting them, and he's like very explicitly exploiting them. And he's like, I'm, without you, without me, you'd be homeless. Without me, you wouldn't have a job. But it's not like they see through him, right? There's no question about
Yeah.
it. They're like, oh, I'm scared of this guy. They're like, it sucks that we have to work with him. That's the way it goes. But like, fuck this guy, right? I think that's the clarity of other characters' vision of your character is very compelling, I think.
Yeah, I think that it's like, I also believe that people won't expect him to go when he does, which, when a moment like that happens, then I also think like, then people are like, oh, what the fuck's gonna happen now? Like, I'm kind of like, where's this gonna go? And then I just keep, instead of like deflating, I just keep building and building and building and building and building till I get to like a really crazy, crazy last, like 15 minutes.
And what a last 15 minutes it is. All right, I'm going to I think wrap us up in a minute. I got a couple more questions just to kind of take us to the home stretch, as it were. First of all, we're screening Bum and Underground Film Festival. Do you consider yourself an underground filmmaker? And if so, what does that mean to you?
Well, I'm above ground right now, but I do consider myself an underground filmmaker. And I think being underground is really being raw, The idea of like being underground is like supporting what's above. And I think ultimately, I mean that's just a literal sense, but I think that yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I don't even consider myself a filmmaker. I think I'm just a putz, but I think right now, yeah, underground filmmaker is cool. I think it's just like the most raw and truthful type of filmmaking. And typically underground filmmaking has zero budgets to work with, and it's just like all instinct and intention and dream. And yeah, I feel honored to have Bum playing. Buff. And
Yeah.
yeah, I don't know. I'm really grateful for that opportunity. And yeah, I'm an underground filmmaker. You know, what's it to you, man?
Oh yeah, that's the end. Yeah, I want you to say, yeah, I'm underground. Underground means fuck you. That's what I want. That was a great answer. Thank you. Can you? I actually really do. Sorry, you said that you kind of like left it hanging, but I do like what you said. You're like underground and supporting what's above, because there's it just I mean, to me, it's like a lot of stuff on the ground level, on the down and dirty. Like that's where a lot of the most interesting filmmaking is happening, and a lot of the most interesting art is happening.
Yeah, I feel that, man. Like, I'd rather be down in the dirt, down in the shit all the time for the rest of my life than being one of those dudes who doesn't even know what that means, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's like I feel like, especially as the way we can access art now is like so much of I feel like the future of we're talking about filming specifically is going to be built on stuff like this, where people like the real heads see it, and then like you know it's kind of like almost like Velvet Underground-y, where it's like you know everyone who listened to them may start a band, you know, and like I just really feel like you know 50 years from now cinema is going to be built on the bones of the people just working in the dirt, as it were, you know.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
So at least I hope. All right, can you talk to me about you've got a couple projects in the kind of up. So I'm asking you what's next, basically, which is so I want to ask you specifically about first about your acting in another member of the Elytra Collective's projects. Josh Murphy, right, is directing a movie starring you. Can you talk about that one first?
Yeah, Josh put together this. Actually, it's pretty similarly themed to Bum as well. It is about the housing crisis in the 90s. It also has a character similar to Jim Lackey. Josh is such a brilliant visualist. And, you know, to see him stepping his foot into actually like making fiction and telling a story so near and dear to him is really incredible. And for me, I've known Josh for a long time. Over a decade, we've been making movies together. You know, and I think with Josh, when I heard about this from its inception, I was like, you know, it's really cool that you're making something like really vulnerable about his own experience with housing and things like that. And it, you know, the frustrations of it all and the corruption of it all. And I think with him, I told him, I said, I don't care what I have to do to be your actor, but if I'm your lead, I'm gonna do everything I possibly can to give you the best performance I've ever done. You know, I want to be, and it's completely different from anything I've ever done. You know, it's very very tortured and straight. And I don't I felt like I've been a horrible actor until like last year. And I feel now I feel like I've just unlocked something in my mentality where I'm like, I think I can pull this off. Like, I think I know how to do it now. I have no ego about it or maybe even anxiety anymore because I get the process or how I understand how it works for me at least now, which is like, I don't know how I unlocked that, but I'm really proud of what I've done so far for the movie. That's coming up soon. I think we're gonna do a Halloween release of that one.
What's it called, by the way?
Tom Hornets, little play on words on Tim Hortons.
Okay, cool.
nothing to do with Tim Hortons, Tom Hornets. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And Josh does some insane animation in it, and his editing's super sharp, razor sharp. And yeah, it's gonna be really cool. I'm excited to see it finish.
Oh, yeah. And also, you said that Josh previously, you can apply to here. He's worked more in documentary spaces beforehand, right? As a director. So,
Yeah.
did you feel
Yeah,
like.
he's made other like narrative shorts, but under the umbrella of Elytra, he's mostly done documentary work, some CBC documentaries, and we actually have a CBC documentary that we're working on right now, which is about the Waltham UFOs.
Oh, there we go. Coming back. All right. Cool. You know, I love a UFO movie. That's I'm excited for that too. Hell yeah. Anthony, so many projects in the works. You work. You're one of the hardest working dudes I know, I gotta say. You are always, every time I talk to you, you got some. If you're not literally making money, you are making art, and hopefully both as well. But
One's just to fund the other.
one just from there. That's how it goes often, isn't it? But hopefully one day they will fund themselves. Let's say. Okay, and the other thing, I know you're working on a few things, but you have we talk about body bag. Actually, no, why don't you tell me what's another thing you're working on? What's another thing that's coming up next?
Project I'm working on right now is a shot on video, non-found footage, sci-fi horror movie with my dog as the main character.
Fuck, dude. Fuck, awesome.
It's basically like
That's awesome.
if this would be how I'd describe it. If Joe Meredith directed Watchers with Corey Haim and the Golden Shepherd or the Golden Retriever.
Wow. I don't sounds fucking sick. I don't even know what to do with that. It sounds sick as hell.
Yeah, I'm like a lumberjack dude, and I got my dog, and she's a boxer. She's an older girl, right? And I wanted to make something that would memorialize her, immortalize her. What am I saying? Immortalize her.
Both.
Both. And so yeah, there's it actually a sleep paralysis nightmare fueled this, where I was transporting an alien chemical that was in a box. And it started spilling, and I'm wearing a hazmat suit and with another guy, and we start scooping it up and putting it back in the box. But upon doing so, the liquid rips through our gloves and we start melting from the inside out. So I'm trying to make a crazy melt movie with some it's gonna be pretty like action-packed actually, and a lot more straightforward for me. Like in comparison to like the Tad Nightingale movies and Bum, so I don't really know how it's like I actually have no idea how it's gonna play out. Like I know plot wise how it's gonna play out, but I have no idea. Like it's just weird that it's not found footage and it's like shot on video and it's just like sort of traditional. Because I've started to do shot on video movies, I figured I want to do something that also, like, I would also delve into like traditional SOV, kind of like getting rid of the found footage angle, just to do it, you know? Because like I love those movies too, and I just want to try something. And I figured this dog movie, there's a pretty fucking hilarious opening, which is like two tones in war with themselves. Where it's transitional shots of like the alien chemical and hazmat people and this really like pulse pounding music, and then it's shots of my dog running through the countryside to this kind of like Homeward Bound soundtrack, and then these tones keep meshing until they clash and they meet, and then that's when the universes cross over to each other.
Sounds good as hell, man. I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to see it come together. I'm excited to see your dog on screen.
She's a good girl. I love her
What's her
too
name?
much. Brooklyn, but in the movie, her name's Bonky. Yeah,
Maybe
I don't know.
close enough to Brooklyn that she would still respond to it on camera, perhaps.
If I got like a hot dog on a string or something, maybe, yeah.
Well, except for that. Okay, to end us up then, are there any questions that you wish I had asked you, but I haven't? Any questions you want to be asked?
No, I like you asked some great questions, and I'm like pleased with them. I don't know if there's anything else that I'd want to cover. I think just going forward, I think we got to get you in a movie.
Oh, dude, I'd be honored. I would love. I can be one of the, maybe you could make one of those roles where it's like we're calling the psychic expert from out of town, and I show up in a suit window, and I'm like, well, I mean, we, yeah. Oh, sorry, go on. Sorry.
No, that's a great idea. I did ask my friend Jeremiah to kind of do a similar thing where we have this character who's like a militarized Jim Lackey kind of, and he's like he's talking to these scientists on the on this little CRT, and you know, I could definitely get a second scientist in there or something like that, because I'd love to get you in on something. You've been so supportive of my work and all this for a long, long time, and we've been friends thanks to Letterboxd for a long, long time.
Yeah, it's been a delight.
Yeah, it's awesome, dude.
Hell yeah, dude. Well, I feel like you want to say any last words for the audience, and then I'll stop recording.
Yep.
You're on the spot, but go for it.
Hey guys, I just want to know that hey guys, I just want to ask, what do you call the sweat that accumulates between two rednecks fucking? Well, I'll tell you, relative humidity. So, I'm just gonna leave you with
Yeah,
that.
that's the end of that. Okay, perfect. I'll stop the recording now. That was great.